Welcome to the Election 2007 podcast interviews. In this podcast series, candidates in the May 2007 polls tell you what they think about the various issues and problems facing the country. No sound bites, just complete answers to pressing questions so you can make an informed choice in May.
Our guest for this podcast is Senator Joker Arroyo, who is running for re-election under the Team Unity slate. Welcome to the show, Senator. Our first questions will be from Lynette Luna, Inquirer.net's breaking news editor.
Hello, Senator Arroyo. First question would be, and I think it's something that you've often been asked, but for the benefit of our podcast listeners, why are you running for the Senate again?
That's a very interesting question. I thought of retiring. That's the truth. But then I really am worried about after the elections, the country may face some kind of a crisis because of the fight now is just too much. Both sides are very unforgiving. And there's a possibility that even after the elections, the fight will continue. I was just thinking, if I should just stay out as I thought I should, then what I am afraid of would happen. It's very difficult to be on the sidelines. In the martial law years, I was outside fighting the government, and that's a terrible thing. So I was just thinking, if something should happen, then I am inside the government, then it's easier and I could be more effective. So I don't know. Perhaps that's the most decisive thing propelled me to run. The fear that the country, instead of being united, is getting more and more divided.
Why under the administration?
Well, I ran in 2001 in the People Power Coalition. That was the slate of the president. The fact is, I never left the party, although I criticized the party, I think, just too much. No. So if I ran now, I'm running the same ticket that I ran the last time. And also on balance, I figured out that if along the way you'll ask me questions, I'll tell you why I chose this one. Because as I've said, in a crisis, then the reason precisely why I decided to run again, one cannot be neutral. In a crisis, one has to take a side. Because I think that being neutral is for those people, fence sitters and all that. You have to take a position and you stand by it. And along the way, if you ask me, then I'll answer why I decided to run for the ticket for this one, for the administration slate. So may I continue?
Yes.
All right. You see, it's like this. The opposition I've been watching, in my case, for instance, in the Senate, I fought the president in the People's Initiative. And I was the one who argued for the Senate. No one else argued there. They could have, but they didn't. The only one on the opposite side who helped was Coco Pimentel, who was not a candidate then, because he argued also the case in the Supreme Court. Then the case of EO-464, a direct challenge to the Senate. Now, I again appeared in the Senate and argued against it, against EO-464. Then when the PCGG tried to abuse its powers, the Senate went to the Supreme Court. I argued again the case. In the Venable contract, I went to the Supreme Court and argued the case. All those cases, I argued and won all of them. No defeats. Now, in the case of 1017 and another one I forgot already. Well, 1017 proclamation, which was an assault on freedom of assembly and freedom of the press, I, as chairman of the Committee on Public Services, investigated it and came out with a report condemning the attempts of the government to suppress press freedom. Now, in that case, I did more than what any single oppositionist had or could do. But they're very loud saying that the president had why those things happened, all right. But I'm just thinking, despite all that, I had fought fair and square in the venue that it should be fought, which is the Supreme Court. I did not go out to win or court the favor of the public because it would not, in the end, matter. If I tried to fan the fires, as I did during the martial law years when I was in the forefront of all the fights, not behind but in front of all those who had to demonstrate. Well, what would happen to the country? What I'm trying to say is that I went to the Supreme Court because that is the venue where you have to settle this. The other side tried to destabilize the government. The response to the problem is to court disaster, encourage rebels, destabilize the government. I cannot go for that because I already saw what happened. In 1989, we were already ahead. We were hitting, I think, a 6 or 7% growth rate. Then RAM started his coup d'etat, and then what happened? Our growth rate went into negative. It took us on, I think, up to 1994, 1995, midway in the Ramos administration that we were able to recover. Now, I find that irresponsible, that if they're dissatisfied, fine. But there's a venue, and the venue I fought in the Supreme Court and won without having to destabilize the government. But in their case, no. They want to destabilize the government. They want to overthrow the government. But when you ask them the question, supposing you overthrow the government, who will succeed? Then they will say, well, we will figure it out. You can imagine, we don't know who will run the government. They even think a revolutionary junta or whatever. Fine. So the next question, will you accept Noli de Castro, the constitutional successor? They said no. They even said it's not elections. All of those are unconstitutional, all those are illegal. What I'm saying is that, as far as I'm concerned, I will follow the constitutional route. I won't deviate from it. Now, I cannot be with a group which will rely on the constitution when it suits them, but will disregard the constitution when it does not suit them. That's what is happening with the opposition. Now, in the case of Gloria, despite the fact that I've been fighting her so much, not once did she tell me, Joker, you slow down, please, like this, like that. No. In other words, in so far as she's concerned, she takes defeats. But in this case, no. The constitution for the opposition is an instrument to gain power. It is just an instrument, not the foundation or the basis of the foundation of the solidity of the country, but an instrument to grab power. No, that it's totally unacceptable to me that the constitution, which is the foundation of our government, should be used as a tool. That is what the opposition is. So I can go on and on those points alone. How could I go for the constitution? As far as I'm concerned, I'm steeped in the constitution. I can't deviate from that. Now, in the case, for instance, of the Bulante, you can imagine, Senator Magsaysay heard that. As chairman of Blue Ribbon, I was the secondary committee. But I wrote the report. Because June, Magsaysay, being not a lawyer, said, you write the report. So I retained outside counsel to write the report, and then I went over it. So my signature is there, side by side with June Magsaysay. That's the Bulante report. I don't know what are the others, the Comelec fiasco. I investigated that. I came out with a finding condemning the Comelec, and that I forgot already the company involved. Then, many other anomalies. Now, what the opposition had been doing is simply fanning the fires, but not providing the solution. If they want to do something, they should provide solutions. So, in these elections that had been bandied around, the opposition has to prove that the cheated votes, when I say cheated votes, let us say 1 million votes. The cheated votes are 300 million. 700 are clean. Now, it's a principle in election law that if the cheated votes cannot overcome the clean votes, then you cannot nullify the elections. Why? Because those who voted clean cannot be deprived of their vote. Those who did not participate cannot be denied their vote simply because 300 cheated. That's a principle in election law. Otherwise, if there's a claim of massive cheating, but the massive cheating will not will not overcome. The lead, that's not, there's no, the law says that you cannot annul election. So that's been going on and on. I'm not saying that I condone the cheating, but the cheating was done by both sides. And the figures are there to say, unfortunately, this is not, the lawyer of both Noli de Castro and the president are one and the same. So, well, he doesn't want to emphasize the fact that Loren and Nano got the same number of votes. How can that be? So how can they complain when they have the same? That's a fact. It's there. But that is lost in all of this. It's lost in all of this, in this exchange of views. And since anyway, I was told that this will be for posterity. Okay, so I tell it because then it's good that it's recorded. Recorded because I don't usually say these things. But it's all right. But that's the point.
Having said that, Senator, do you believe then that this government that we have right now is a legitimate government?
Oh, yes. It's legitimate for one simple reason. They keep on harking on the 2001 elections, all right? But the Supreme Court has declared it already. At some point, we must also rely on our established institutions, all right? So this one, it is legitimate, but I cannot say that I will condone or agree on the cheating, because cheating is cheating and evil, no matter what. But supposing we say now that it's illegitimate, who runs the country? I ask the question. If someone can tell me who will run the country because this is an illegitimate government, what does the opposition say? Because GMA cheated, ergo, they take their place. Who appointed them? Did the people say that they won? So who will among the opposition? I mean, these are the philosophical, intellectual arguments that must be pointed out. So GMA cheated, assuming. Let's concede that she cheated. Who will run the country? The rightful one will be Noli de Castro, because under the Constitution, he is the one. But the opposition do not want to accept him. So who will run? Someone anointed by the opposition? Who anointed them to anoint the who will run the country? No one. So that's the point. This not to say that I'm giving a clean bill of health to the administration. None of that sort. But all I'm saying is that at the moment, unless a good answer is given, then we just have to accept this government.
One of the points being raised against you, Senator, is when you were chairman of the Senate Blue Ribbon Committee, there were some issues that you actually sat on.
Say it and I'll answer it.
Well, among them would be Jose Pidal.
Ah, very good, very good. Jose Pidal and Jose Velarde, let's take that together. In the Jose Velarde, I played a principal role in both. In the Jose Velarde, because I was the head prosecutor, where I demanded that the second envelope be opened. In the Jose Pidal, I was chairman of the Blue Ribbon Committee that refused and ruled that the Jose Pidal account cannot be opened. So the question is, why the inconsistency? There is no inconsistency at all. Both the Jose Velarde and the Jose Pidal accounts were both fictitious, but they were legal because they were opened and closed during the period or during the time that fictitious accounts were allowed. So that's settled. The Jose Velarde account, which almost transactions total almost 3.2 billion pesos, was the subject in the Senate impeachment. The question was whether that should be opened or not. I insisted that it be opened. The reason for that is this, that the law is very clear. Bank accounts cannot be opened. No way it can be opened. That is the essence of the bank secrecy law, which has been with us for over 100 years, and that is sacred doctrine. Otherwise, no bank will exist if you don't guard the secrecy of a depositor's deposit. The only exception is if it is the subject in an impeachment. So because of that, the issue was whether it should be opened or not. I insisted it would be opened. I lost in that vote by, I think, 11, 10 or whatever. But that also led to EDSA. So let's forget that. Comes now the Jose Pidal. Why did I refuse? Simple. Because under the law, you can only open the bank account if it is impeachment. Is there no more remedy? There is. How? You go to court and ask the court that it be opened. In other words, the Senate cannot open it, but the court can order it opened. So there's a process. So what did the opposition do? I told them, you go to court. But they did not, because they wanted to use it for propaganda. So it was a matter of going to court, getting a court order, and we will obey. And if I ordered the opening, I go to jail, because the law is very clear. Whomsoever orders the opening of an account of a bank will be guilty of the penal provisions under the bank secrecy law. That's why all the banks refused, if you will remember, that all the banks refused. They said, your law that you enacted says that we cannot open our bank accounts. And if we do, without a court order, we go to jail. We don't want to go to jail. That's the answer. Now, it has been beclouded, and it's a good thing you asked that. I won't duck any issue here. But the problem with the opposition is they didn't want to go to court because they wanted it hanging. And they succeeded in making that an issue up to this moment. But you asked it, so I answered it. That's it. If they can answer it up to now, why did they not go to court? And the law is very clear. Bank accounts cannot be opened except in impeachment cases. That's Jose Velarde. But bank accounts can be opened by order of the court. All right. So if they applied with the court, which was simple, they go to a friendly judge and get an order, then I have no choice but to open. But for me, as chairman of the Senate Blue Ribbon Committee, saying that I open it, I go to jail. I'm not going to jail for the opposition. Now, these are the little things that... So you ask me, how could I go with for the opposition? But there's intellectual dishonesty in all of these things.
For my last question, Senator, if elected, how will you define your term this time? You have been known as a graft buster.
I wouldn't know, because I rely on my past record rather than the future record. You know, a legislator cannot have a platform because, well, he has to legislate. All I can say is that this country can live without a Congress because we have so many laws, it's not being implemented. And that's the problem that we have. So things like that. I don't know. So you ask me about what will be my role. I don't know. Perhaps I'll just continue with what I do. But I would like a publication of the voting record of each senator on various issues, you know, so that they'll know. Like the anti-money laundering law. The very vocal senators who were asking for the opening of the Jose Pidal account supported my amendment that the bank secrecy law should still remain, because the law says it can be opened. I oppose that. And those who are shouting loud about all of this, you know, they voted for it. That's why the banks said, you just passed the anti-money laundering law, which prohibits the opening of bank accounts without a court order. Why are you telling us now to violate the very law that you passed 3 months ago? That's how it is. I think you should ask these questions so that we get intelligent answers from people. Running for an office, it's not just trying to tell the people this and that. They must also be intellectually honest on certain issues which matter. No? Otherwise, so who are we? We're just like peddlers there in the streets. So these are the things that... to the question of what I'll do, I don't know. If the performance... As Blue Ribbon Committee chairman, I have fought against private quarrels being ventilated in Senate committees. You'll see a senator there deliver a privileged speech which has nothing to do with public interest, But somebody told him, you deliver a speech, then it will be referred to a committee. So the committee will investigate it. It has no public purpose. It has no nothing. But it creates, it's actually a blackmail against whoever is the subject of investigation. Those things, perhaps I will work on that to limit that. So to a certain extent, 464, which I fought, had some basis. Because there were already investigations being conducted outside of a public purpose. There were already private quarrels which were being litigated through the various committees in the Senate. I mean, that's not a forum for private quarrels. That should be in the courts. That should be in the courts.
Thank you very much, Senator.
You're most welcome.
Good morning, sir. I asked the easy questions here. Before you announced your candidacy, you were always saying that, no, you weren't going to run because of the cost. So this time around, have you already projected how much you're going to spend?
I wouldn't know how much I spend because it's still utang, no? All right. My credit is good. Like, the main expenses here involved is for these spots. All right. So for the first week and second week, the first week has been paid. Some godfather paid it, said, okay, you go ahead. You know, you must remember that when you're in public office, people will really ask you to run. When you tell them because of the cost you don't want, they'll say, we'll help you up to a certain point. All right, so you take off, you can. So for the first week, he said, I'll answer for the first week. How about, I said, the second week? I'll talk to another guy who might help you in the second week. Now, whether he did or he did not, I don't know. But we are going through the end of the second week. I don't want to ask him lest he tells me that he has not been able to provide for it. But there's a remedy which, of all people, was provided to me by Mar Rojas. Mar Rojas told me that we have 13 weeks to go. So he told me that you provide for the first week, then go easy on the second week, blank on the third, fourth, fifth week, then just go one half for, I don't know, a certain week before Holy Week, so that you're still alive in the mind of the people. Then after the Holy Week, you again put something, one half, just so you're still in the consciousness. But be sure that during the last 3 weeks, you go full blast, all right? He told me that. So, which is good because you can, just in case there are weeks that you cannot, there are no sponsors, you can always, you can provide for it, which I think is good. But one thing is that we have also certain advantages. You know, I was very low in the polls, and that's one reason why I didn't want to, very quite frankly. But then for some unknown reason, by the time, just before deadline, but it went up, so it went, mine was a steady climb, and then without doing anything. So I thought, well, so it could take a chance and all that. And also because I was thinking about, I was thinking about after the elections. I was not thinking about the elections after the elections, because as I've said, you know, in a crisis, you have to take choices. You know, so that's how it went. So to the cost, it's a manageable one, and I think some candidates are also doing that. But it's not really picket mata, because over the years I have had friends, and it will depend upon my showing during the first 3 weeks. After that, I think some people will help. Some people will help me, and all that. Although it's pretty expensive, but we can manage. Because over the years, I've been in the public eye for so long that it's not as difficult as the young ones who have. You know, they still have to establish their own, you know, connections.
But would you like to give a figure to that, you know, amount that you plan to spend?
No, what I did. No, I cannot, because it depends upon contributor. Like, for instance, what was this that as I've said, what the providers say, or I'll take the first one. About the second one, they tell us, I look for a funder for all that. Now, that's an accepted norm. It can be done. And I think they will now help me because they think siguro that I could win. All right, or perhaps they... You know what's difficult is if you have no chance of winning, then it's very hard to get the funders. But I don't go around looking for funds. I really don't like that. I mean, it's not that it's demeaning, but it's not. But they come by. I mean, I'm not like the others who, you know, I don't want to say that. But I have so many respectable friends. You know, I've been in public service, but all those, I've never spent my own money. In all those years that I ran in 1992, 1995, 1998 in the first district, Makati, financial district of the country. I never spent my own money. In 2001, I ran. I didn't spend my own money. I've never spent my own money. Because then you, in the moment you do that, you compromise yourself. That's how it is. So as to the amount, you'll never know because they... You see, when you talk about money, it is as if you have no class, no? No, really. So when the provider, you talk to them, you say, sige, we'll take care of that. Ganon yung usapan. So I said, you'll take care of that. Don't worry. Second week, we will again take it. But ganon. But of course, may kabaka dyan, eh. You're worried about that. Supposing he does not go through with it. But... We're all in the game. We can manage.
Has there been a time, has there been an instance when a godfather, like you called them, collected on...
I never call. That's one thing. I never call. But there are well-meaning friends, and they're good. That's why I've not lost faith because... of past experience. I said I've never spent a single centavo of my own money. That's why I can maintain my independence. That's the reason. Otherwise, I won't be this almost to the point of being a little brash. It's because of that. You must remember that I represented this financial center when I was a congressman.
Still on the elections, what are your thoughts on automated elections?
You know, the automated election is good. I think it's long overdue. Unfortunately, it was tainted when there was an attempt. It was tainted with a scandal. But I think that we should accelerate the process because we are behind. We're among the few countries that still have the old manual kind of voting. You can imagine... For the results of the elections of the senatorial, we will never be at ease until after 10 days. Until after 10 days after the elections, and that's not good. So we should automate, and let's see. But the downside of that is that Filipinos are they tinker with anything that is there. No? They'll tinker again with the machine, so you never know whether it's good or bad. So I don't really know. No, in this age. But I am for automation. But it should be a gradual one. Otherwise, we cannot shift to just a one step. So perhaps we should be full automation after the third election.
For my last question, I have slightly personal. What was Mayor Binay's reaction when you joined the administration ticket?
Nothing. We remain friends. He's on the other side. I'm on the other side. There's nothing. We remain there. We remain friends. And the same as Kiko and the same as Manny Villar. We're now on opposite sides, but we remain as friends. I've never lost friends because of politics. You know, Binay, I started him off and I wish him well because he's there, but he's on the other side. But that's it. That's how politics is.
Thank you.
Sir, sa info ad nyo kasi nakalagay nyo pag bad ka, lagot ka.
Well, it is included in the bad. You know, the conclusion is there, no? All right. But really, you must remember, kung bad ka,
Do you think the president is bad?
Begale, you ask me the question. I am on her side this time. Then you will ask me. I never, you know, once you join a group, you don't drown those people who are there with you.
Pero marami kayong mga batas, marami siyang mga orders, directives that you went against, di ba?
But she's a good sport. What I'm saying, she's a good sport. I beat her in 4-5 cases in Supreme Court. She took it. Which is what I'm saying, not unlike the opposition. Nanalo na, marami pang reklamo. We won all. Look, what's the complaint? When the president loses, okay, fine. I mean, she lost the 4-6-4. She tried this thing to circumvent it. We also fought back. All right. But the point is that she goes still within the parameters of the Constitution. If you will notice, it's central to what I am saying. Is that to me, everything must be within the Constitution and the rule of law. We could disagree, we could. And my main gripe against the opposition is that they invoke the Constitution, they invoke the law if it will favor them. But they will disregard it when it doesn't favor them. I mean, I don't think that's fair.
Okay, you keep on saying, sir, that the opposition has no alternative leader, that the opposition mishandled the issues against the president. So how do you think the opposition...
Mishandled it, not mishandled. Yeah. Because they've succeeded in blurring and the issues. What I'm saying is that they're using the Constitution and the laws as a tool to, in fact, subvert. Look, when you want to overthrow the government, you want to overthrow the Constitution, isn't it? Oh. So when they cheered for the Marines there in Fort Bonifacio for the Scout Rangers in, I don't know what court of that, in Laura, I think in Central Luzon, and they encouraged, they never condemned it. And in fact, I said, What is the poster boy of the Oakwood doing in this lake? I mean, it is as if to say that as far as we're concerned, overthrowing the government is a very legitimate thing. Reflected by the symbol is, well, one of the candidates.
Okay, one last question on the opposition issue. One opposition candidate commented that parang it's the case of if you can't beat them, join them. That's what he's saying against you.
I've been beating the government. I've not lost a single case. I didn't have to join them. What, I'll join them? But why will I join them? Look, there are only two choices at the moment. You're either with the administration or you are with the opposition. I said in my statement, in a crisis you have to make a choice. I have made my choice. However I disagree, however I condemn the administration, there's still a better choice than the opposition. It's as simple as that.
Sir, in 6 years in the Senate, sir, what have you done so far for Filipino workers?
You don't even know it. You know, because it's a quiet thing. You know, when I went to the Middle East, I was asked by the overseas workers only two things. One, that the remittance rates, the monies that they send here, the rates are high. I mean, to them, it could go lower. Could anything be done to make it lower? Two, could the cell phone rates also be lower? Why? Because they said that for so long as we talk on the cell phones, it is as if we are home. But if the rates are lower, we could make even, we could use it more. Now, they said if they call, let's say from Saudi or from Dubai to the Philippines, there's nothing... The providers here, that's Globe and what is the other one, Smart, can do about it because the rates are fixed by the countries in the Middle East. But they said we have developed the technique that our husband, for instance, or our wives will call, will text us, and I'll call you at this time. So we will call them at that particular time. If you succeed in lowering the rates here in the Philippines, then we solved the problem, all right. I asked the two big companies, Smart and Globe, in a full dress, informal conference, not an investigation. Not an investigation, just conference. Ask them whether they could lower the rates. They kept on saying that, no, we'll do this, then don't worry. Okay, fine. Little by little, they came around, and in the end, they agreed to lower the rates. Starting with, all they wanted was, you allow us to make it promo rates first. For the business, then we make it permanent. And so, like that. So, it was even published, oh, I don't know, full page. My name was there, my picture was there. That they were thankful that I did not investigate. That is the theme. You know, I could have investigated them and says, oh, look, if you don't, then I will investigate. No investigation. So that is what I have done. That is the request. And I like that very much because it was advertised in the newspapers. But unfortunately, perhaps in the internet, if you put it in the internet, they'll know. But in the newspapers, full page ads, my name was there, of course, very little, very small, through the efforts of Joker Arroyo. It was small, so perhaps nobody noticed it. And that was Smart and Globe that did it.
There was no need for legislation.
No need for investigation. That's what I'm trying to say. That sometimes persuasion can also be done, not necessarily investigation, not necessarily regulation. So it could be done, and they agreed. So it's lower. The rates now are lower. So I'm very happy. That one, I'm really very happy. Because we did it without having to go through an investigation or a legislation. And I'm very pleased myself about that.
So what are the other things that you did without making a legislation, aside from lowering the rates of the...
Oh, other things, because I'm very fond of doing that. You know. Also, you can use that the club. You just threaten them, you'll investigate with the blue ribbon. They can also escape. But there are some things that I can't recall offhand. I did so many things. Oh. Light investigations, for instance, a machine lock, right, and things like that. You can imagine if I did not abort that thing. And then another one, I don't know what. I can't tell. But I don't investigate.
But, sir, that's the reason, sir. Kaya kukunti lang yung bills that you filed since you were in Congress and in the Senate, because you want to do things
A senator, congressman can file so many bills and all that. But if it's not enacted, it's useless. So, you know what? No. But if you read the book of John F. Kennedy about, I think that's Profiles in Courage, where he assessed all the senators, seven of them, that you judge a senator by his voting record, not by the bills he introduces, not for what speeches he makes or what he does, but his voting record on crucial issues, because that is what determines the man. All right. So, I would think that I should be judged on the basis of my voting record. On Bainwell. Like, for instance, in the House, I fought the privatization of Petron for the simple reason that I said then that in Southeast Asia or in Asia, we always have to have a national oil company. Without that, there is no, what you call that, there'll be no leverage, there'll be no national company that can maintain the oil prices. Despite my opposition, they proceeded with privatization of Petron. Now look, we cannot regulate the prices now. And then the Banco Central, the Banco Central made the Philippine government assume its debts of almost 300-400 billion pesos. I fought that hard. Now, even this one of the PIRA, I voted against that because we assumed again another 400-500 billion pesos of the NAPOC of debts. Those were the... When the death penalty was acted upon the House to reimpose it. I voted, held it for 6 months. Well, I lost. It was reimposed. But when I got to the Senate, I had it. I led the abolition of the death penalty and won. But those are the things. It's a crusade, you know, that I lost in the House but won in the Senate. Now, the other things here that I was against IVAT. I voted against it. I don't know how many. The point is that on the crucial issues that mattered, I voted against bills, and I'll be very happy if I provide you with the bills that I'm more concerned, or rather interested in, how I voted and fought on issues, because it's not only introducing bills. I can introduce a bill there, for instance, that the height of buildings should be so and so. Well, that's already affected my cup. I mean, so that's.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning, sir. I'm Lira Fernandez. Sir, the president has been making a pitch for unity amid the election season, and that she said we should make this election season focus on the economy rather than on politicking. Do you honestly believe unity can be achieved after this election?
Well, I have my doubts whether that can be achieved. That's why I said it to an earlier question. One of the reasons I decided to run for re-election is because of my doubts about what would happen after the elections in May. Now, to the pitch that we should cooperate, yes, on the economy, I think we should all hands should be on deck, and we should help, because we can't get on quarreling over this. I mean, it's not doing the country any good. We could quarrel on other things, but two things I think we shouldn't quarrel about: the economy and the stability. Meaning stability, I mean peace and order and all that sort of thing. All the others is fair game. So whether I'm not very optimistic about that. The president, naturally the president would hope for that, because, well, she would like something that is stable. But I don't know whether that's a realizable thing.
Why so, sir? Another candidate has said
because
that...
Because of the... There's so much hate in the way I witnessed the campaign. There's so much hate, and issues that have been there for 5-6 years, it's a never-ending issue. It is as if that it's like the Adam and Eve thing, the wages of Adam, the ages Eve, still being recalled now. We have to move on. For us who have been already through so many things, we feel that we have to move on. The Philippines is such a sorry state. You guys have not felt what it is to be a Filipino, but I experienced that because I'm older than you. There was a time when you go to Hong Kong and you're a Filipino, they look up to you. Just only Hong Kong. You go to Singapore, you go to Bangkok, they look up to you because you are a Filipino. That's what we're talking here only of Asia, huh? And all that. But now, no, we're not. Even shopkeepers in Hong Kong, once upon a time, you're a Filipino, then that means you can afford. Now you're a Filipino, perhaps you cannot afford, things like that. So we must also do something which makes you as proud as Filipinos, so that we are not looked down. We are looked down already. So we quarrel here. It's not to say that we shouldn't. There must be disagreements, yes, but not the way where you covered the Senate, and you can see there. Bills cannot be passed for 3, 4, 5, 6 months. Never-ending interpolations. I cannot understand that. Questions asked will be asked again. Questions that should be asked in the committee level are not being asked because they don't attend. And then when it comes to the debate in plenary, then they'll ask those questions which should have been asked in the committee. You know, like facts. You cannot ask those questions in the Senate floor. They should be asked in the committee level, where you can ask the resource persons to answer the questions. You want a figure, you want the statistics, you want their views, they're there. But the moment it is already in plenary on the floor, the only one that will answer that will be the senator, who may not know the answer. So it is, well, it's everything has turned topsy-turvy, and then I think we have to re-educate ourselves. Even the Senate has to rethink that we should also be a responsible body. It's an embarrassment. Even if I fought the president on 464, the president had basis on that. Because you know very well that when a witness is brought before a committee, they're pilloried and they're abused, and the way they are looked upon, you would think that they were just, you know, housemates or houseboys. I mean, that's not fair. And yet there should be some protection. I mean, they've not finished and they lecture them. I mean, how can a senator lambaste a person that you invite? They are called resource persons, meaning they are supposed to provide the Senate with information. That's why they're called resource persons. Yet when they go there, they shout at them and all that. I mean, that's why sometimes I don't want to attend the committee hearings, which is sickening.
Sir, but some are saying it's just 3 years to go and that any attempt at destabilizing this government would be futile.
Well, if it's just 3 years, then let her finish her term and then go full blast in the 2010 elections. It's easy. In 2010 elections, go full blast to oust her, no? Because the price we would pay for those 3 years of destabilization is something we cannot afford now. We're already at the bottom of the heap here in Southeast Asia. I mean, 3 years is, let her be. And then just watch out that she doesn't do anything wrong. Now, then prepare for the 2010 elections. Then we have fair and whatever.
Sir, you mentioned keeping a close watch on the president. Are you happy with the way she's handling the political killings?
Well, the political killings, look at this political killing. Sometimes the president also doesn't, the president's people don't know how to handle their affairs. She created the Mello Commission. The opposition said that it would be a rubber stamp. They immediately, you remember that they kept on saying that the Mello Commission will not turn out to be a good commission. That is the attack of the opposition. All right. So it did not even started. They say, no, that's no good. Mello Commission started. They called witnesses, the opposition and the left and the victims. Nobody appeared. Only the AFP appeared. Well, then they make a report. The report, I have not read the report, so I cannot comment on that. All right. Whether good or bad, well, it's what I read in the papers and hear on the radio. No. The question is that I say that the president's men have mishandled this thing. She created a commission that rendered a report which is acceptable to the opposition. How come she doesn't get any credit? It's a little stupid. I mean, you can imagine the irony of it. You create a commission which the opposition said will not do a good job. Now they do a good job. After doing a good job, they criticize now the president, who, to begin with, created that commission that did a good job, which they said will not do well. So, on the political killings, for instance, heard that. Now, on the question of the journalists, for instance, are the killings journalist-related or private? This is a very valid issue. Not to lump a killing simply because a journalist is killed, then the headline will be another journalist killed. But for all you know, because we've been going all over the provinces, there are private fights among journalists there, which is not related to journalism, or because a journalist hits them on the radio, a certain person, and then he's told that way, you lay off, etc., etc. But I'm not going to go over that because I'm busy campaigning, and that Melo report came out. All I know is that ideologically, since all my adult life has been dedicated to human rights, I instinctively condemn it. No? But I don't want to add more to that because I can't give an educated answer because I'm campaigning. I leave that to the other guys to do it. No? You know, you take a human rights case. One thing important in human rights lawyering or advocacy is to be fair. You cannot be a human rights advocate if you are not fair. Because if you talk that you are not fair, then you violate the first rule of human rights, and that is fairness. So that's why I'm not prepared to comment because I don't know. I'm not even ready to meet the report.
Sir, a number of arroyos are running this election, and one of them is Joker. Yeah, one of them is Joker Arroyo, and the three others are related. And one of which you campaigned for in one of your sorties. Yeah, you endorsed Dato Arroyo. So, what's your view on political dynasty?
I don't particularly condemn it. Because that's practiced all over the world. So unfortunate, but it's done all over the country. You must remember President Kennedy while he was in office. Robert Kennedy ran, and then Edward Kennedy ran, and all the Kennedys ran. Even a third descendant Kennedy, the wife of Schwartz, who's that? The one in California, what's his name? Schwartz Arnold. Yeah, he's a Kennedy. Yeah, why is he Kennedy? No, you cannot. What's this? I'm not particularly about this dynasty thing. Although I don't have any relatives, because you have to look at it also this way. You know, families take care of a certain area. They invest their time and money in doing that. So it's as if they want to protect that. So I'm not very particular about that. I don't know who inserted that in the Constitution. No law has been passed because I don't think any congressman or any senator would endorse that. But it's practiced all over the world. Dynasty is just like the pork barrel. It's abused all over the world. Every parliament, and I didn't know it, but the Russian, what's the Russian Duma? I think, yeah. During the communist time, they also had patronage, they'd also pork barrel. That's the way also the Politburo is able to control them. No,
thank you, sir.
Hi, sir. Good morning. I'm Thea Alberto of Inquirer.net. I cover Camp Karame. Sir, what do you see as the country's three most pressing problems, and what solutions do you propose?
In education, economy, we have to wake up, because if we don't wake up, we will be left behind. We take the economy lightly, while all other countries take it seriously. Because economy, it really affects everyone. If we all go up, there'll be, look at, we have no Chinese tourists. You can imagine that. Russian tourists are coming already in numbers, and they are high spenders. You can imagine that, no? So to me, it's the economy. We should help one another too. And also because of it, however we may disagree with globalization, it's there to stay. We cannot anymore stop that. So, if we can beat them, join them, and that's how it is. So, and the other one's education. We're lagging behind very much in education. So we should try to I think the focus should be on that.
Another one, sir. Top three. Another issue, sir.
I've only top two. I won't go beyond that, because the moment you increase the number, then the less attention there would be. Because with education, there's a chain reaction, there's a ripple effect. The economy, there's also chain reaction, there's a ripple effect. So education, you can imagine now that, look at this. Our young don't read newspapers. Why? They're very fond of just watching the TV. You know, the TV is not a good educational, does not educate people. I mean, you have to read. The young are now very lazy. They don't read. Nobody now can speak, even high school students cannot speak straight English. It's Taglish. It's also promoted by TV people will dislike me. I'm running for office, but the truth of the matter is that's the way things are, as if it is being encouraged. If you talk Tagalog, you know, but if you talk English, no? But you can't make anything half-baked is no good.
So, sir, since you already mentioned education, what is your position on the increased tuition fee at the University of the Philippines?
You know, the increased tuition fee if you are in higher income level, you pay more. If you're in the lower income level, you pay less. I mean, I don't think there should be any dispute about.
But what about the argument, sir, that education should be equal for everyone, regardless of your status?
Oh no. But I am willing to pay high rates if I can afford it for the education of my children. But certainly those who cannot afford it but have the mind of my children should be given a low rate. I can't understand all the fuss about the tuition rates in UP. We just discussed that in the Senate. When it's very, very simple. You earn... It's really a Marxist rate. I don't know that model. To each according to his whatever means or whatever. Now, so if your income is high, you pay high. If your income is low, you pay low. Well, what's the quarrel?
Okay. Sir, another topic. Will you push for issues that for religious reasons are opposed by the Catholic Church, like reproductive health, the use of condoms? You know, this issue has been hounding us for quite a while. What's your take on this, sir?
Well, you know, it's very difficult when it comes to the church and all that. I don't want to think anymore. I disagree with them, but I don't want to think, no? Because, you know that the Catholics are a very complicated religion, you know? I mean, there's so many don'ts, so many do's and all that. All right, but to me, I just follow the Catholic doctrine. Whatever they say, I'll follow what de Gaulle did. A very brave man, a good statesman. But I think he was a daily communicant. So he said, well, I don't want to think about religion. I just follow it and that's it. I'll also do that. So that there's so many things to think about religion.
Another one, sir. How do you want Estrada's plunder trial to end?
Well, I suppose it has ended. And that should have been ended. That should have ended sooner. Now, what delayed is, I don't know. But the sooner that's resolved, the better.
So do you think, you know, in your personal opinion, do you think he should be convicted, or?
Well, I cannot preempt the judgment of this Andigan Dayan. Mm-hmm. To begin with, I prosecuted him, so how can I also say that? It is as if I gave a bomb steer to the evidence they presented, or the evidence I presented in the said court. But I don't want to give an opinion. Again, because it's the rule of law. Once a case is in court, leave it with the court. That's why... From the time that was filed, I kept quiet and did not say anything anymore. Good luck to him if he's acquitted.
Is there something light?
I don't mind getting acquitted if the Sandigan says so. I mean, I respect decisions of the court. I mean, I can be comfortable with that. Anyway, 6 years is 6 years for a former president, you know.
Go ahead. Sir, something light. Are you in favor of passing laws for gay and lesbians? You know, they have been urging for equality, same-sex marriage.
I'm an incorrigible liberal. So I can just say, okay, go ahead. No. I don't want to think about those things. So if they want, fine. Some of my best friends have been close and very helpful friends have been gay, so I have no qualms about it at all. Really. Oh. You must be human rights voter to know that you have to think liberal about all those things.
Okay, that would be all for me, sir. Thank you very much.
Good morning, sir. I'm Tea Torres. I'm a reporter for Inquirer.net. I'm covering the courts. Sir, my first question would be, the genuine opposition has always been stressing on the importance of maintaining the independence of the Senate. Former President Estrada even said during the proclamation rally of the GO that the public should not let the Senate fall into the hands of Malacanang. If they will elect the admin candidates. So being part of the admin ticket, what assurance or how will you be able to help maintain the independence of the Senate?
I not only help maintain, I maintain the independence more than any other senator. And I'm an administration candidate. I'm with the administration, but I think I had maintained the independence of the Senate.
Sir, this stint of President Arroyo in Malacanang, some people say this is a good year for jurisprudence because she has been continuously testing the limits of the law, like 1017, EO 464, and I have seen you stand against her policies before the Supreme Court. Now that you're with the admin ticket, how some people are worried that can they still see you stand against these attempts to test the limits of the law?
14 years fighting Marcos, mm-hmm. never giving any quarters, having been detained, having been wounded, fighting Gloria Macapagal Arroyo for 6 years. Perhaps the opposition must start to doubt themselves. I've never changed the position. That's why I am with the administration. You can imagine if I went to the other side. What will they say after prosecuting Erap, when he's now on his side? You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. You can imagine this idea about people asking this question. You should be in the opposition. And who are they to tell me? I prosecuted Erap, then I'll be there on their side. There should be also consistency. And the consistency is there. I'm with the I got elected with the administration. I hit the administration. I never left it. Now I'm here. I openly say so. That I would oppose the president if occasion arises. What more? Unlike others who just you know, like grasshoppers, you know.
Sir, do you agree that the only answer to the country's problems is charter change, particularly a shift to a parliament?
Well, I am against it, so I'm opposed to it. That's why I don't think that's the solution.
But some say that there are provisions of the constitution that are already obsolete. Do you agree with them, sir?
Oh, yes, the constitution has some defects. But the problem with this charter change is they wanted it wholesale. I mean, the whole thing will change. Even the federal constitution of the United States was changed bit by bit. That's why you see the First Amendment, Second Amendment, Third Amendment, so on. All right. Now, we can do that bit by bit. The whole trouble is that they wanted the whole thing. It can't be. You know, if they attempted, for instance, a unicameral, not that I'm in favor of that, but if they attempted a unicameral legislature without making it parliamentary, It had a good chance of support.
What constitutional reforms will you push for in your 3-year term if ever?
Quite frankly, I don't want to think about it. Because if I do, then that's farthest from my mind at the moment. I want to think of the election, but charter change anyway. I'm opposed to it. I fought it, so I mean, I don't want to think about it because I don't want my mind to be cluttered with charter change at this point.
Sir, will you push for a review of the visiting forces agreement?
I mean, I was opposed to that. A review, yes. Mm-hmm. A review, yes, because there's some provisions that can improved. Like the question of Nicole, and you know, whenever U.S. troops come here and they commit crimes off duty, that is a perennial problem. Oh God, that since 1945 is almost 60 years. That's a continuing problem. Now that could be revised, but you know, at this point, it will also be very difficult because. You'll have to ask the United States to review it, and they may not agree. So, to the question of whether I think it should be revised, yes, but the chances of success, I doubt it at the moment. Even the opposition divided on that, you know. There's so many pro-Americans there, the opposition.
Sir,
you count them, there are more pro-Americans there. Than really, I'm not talking. Because your reporters, you should think about it. You make a head count and you will not notice it there. But,
What holds more important, national sovereignty, international commitments, sovereignty, or human rights?
Human rights is, that's universal. Human rights has no boundaries. So it's even Christian charity. If you're a Christian, that's essentially Christian charity. That you don't touch the body of someone, or you abuse that body, or you make him suffer. That is the essence of human rights. It stems from charity, Christian charity, all right. So it cannot be a basis of a comparison with sovereignty. Is talking about, you know, you're talking about the power of a country. But any nationality, any whatever, race, creed, well, it's universal.
Sir, that's all. Thank you.
Hi, sir. I'm Erwin Oliva. I cover COMELEC and the technology. Sir, for my first question, what are your thoughts on the automation of elections? I mean, do you think automation will solve the cheating in elections?
Not really, but at least it's a faster count. Cheating, I don't know. But I don't exactly buy the idea of cheating because it will minimize cheating because of the ingenuity of the Filipino, you know. I mean, they give them any machine, they can improve on it. I mean, so, I don't know. But to the extent that we should do it, yes, because number one, we're among the few countries that have not automated. Second, because it will be faster. I mean, you can imagine. We don't have any idea whether you've won or not. Even as candidates, we want to know that before we go to sleep. On election day, we already know whether we won or not. I mean, that's for our own sake, you know.
Sir, on the issue of technology, do you have any legislative agenda to push the development of this industry?
Oh, yes, because I don't know too much about that. I mean, quite frankly, I don't even know. I said that to use a cell phone, but I have that because I only use that for calling. All right, so technology, I don't know. But anything that the world is moving already, very fast on this technology thing. We cannot afford to be behind. That's all. So that's why I will support anything. In fact, that's under my committee. Committee on Public Services. And I've been waiting for them to do something about it. And then, well, the executive does not do anything about it because, I don't know, the appointees there, perhaps like me also, they don't know anything about technology, but they were appointed. So these are the things.
Sir, with today's technology, like what you're doing now, people are using technology to campaign. On your answer, how do you use information technology or even the internet to campaign?
This internet, like this, I didn't know even that there is such a thing like this, you know, right? So now it's very good because this reaches so many people instantaneously. And the merit to me, as an outsider coming in for the first time, is that these are for the intelligent people. Now, so since these are for the thinking people, I only hope they're not the lazy people. You know that they park themselves there the whole day just doing anything, just in front of the internet. But faster. But I think also that the ones that use this don't again read papers, and that is not good, because up to now you go to Japan, people there in the subways are still reading the newspapers. I mean, we are a country that have forgotten newspapers, which is not very encouraging. Everybody here just thinks about, you know, about TV, and that's it.
Sir, related to education, most of the graduates, even from top schools, end up working in call centers. Would you promote entrepreneurship or support an ongoing call for more workers in this industry?
You know, these talented graduates that get employed in call centers is the byproduct of our underdevelopment. In other words, because of our state of economy, we cannot provide them with opportunities. That's why I kept on an earlier question. I have only two things: the economy, then education. Because if the economy improves, then there'll be more job opportunities. If we have more job opportunities, perhaps we have less overseas workers. So this is the thing that when I went to Cebu, for instance, we were there to campaign. But then Ralph Recto asked me to say, "You join me. I'm going to see a factory or a plant, which is about only 25 or 20 minutes by helicopter." So I joined him. Then it turned out to be an Aboitiz shipping. What you call this? The shipping company, not the shipping. What's this? The one that build boats. Shipyard. Boy, it's huge and it's big, you know, in the midst of almost a jungle. They employ 5,000 people. So you start to figure out, I come. So you can create this thing. It's an eye-opener. And I said, when I went back, because it's something, it's world-class. When I went back, I asked my staff to find others like that. There are a couple of them, not known, but they're entrepreneurs. I mean, this venture capital tied up with the Japanese. So you start again to rethink, no? That every time some guys invest, some people would want to pull them down, no? All right, so how can we go? Things like that. That was the only one. There are others. Took a campaign for me to even go to realize that. We can move on.
So what about for the science industry? This has been a neglected industry.
Well, the science industry is it's really close to my heart because my daughter is in the science she studied in Cambridge for that. And then she's here instead of being employed abroad. And she keeps on, saying that we should have science and, you know, biosciences and all that sort of thing. We're moving very slowly. Our marine products are the best in the world, I was told. And we have places to do, to improve, but we don't have capital. So, to the extent that we should encourage it, yes. But whether we're doing enough, I don't think so. Because the budget for the Department of Science and DOST is very small. So the question really is whether we should... because we're blessed with many natural... bioscience, whatever, I can't even pronounce them. But we should encourage that because that is where we are strong. But then the government cannot support it because the funds, you know, the funds are just so limited. But yes, I agree with you that we should.
But are we going to give it to the government for it to develop this industry, or should we allow more private help?
That is now the drive. If the government cannot afford it, then they should perhaps ask the private sector. But that's venture capital, so very few people will get into that. No?
So on a lighter note, we want to know what kind of technologies do you use right now? I mean,
the
but I'm an advocate of technology because anything that promotes progress, you can, who would ever think that in 1986 after EDSA there was no cell phone. I got my first. It was in 1998 that there was the first ones here. Tony Boy Kowanko gave me that big one that he used, that things like that. Then came the Xerox machine. Then came the, what do you call it, this one?
Podcasting, sir.
Yes, but they were big ones then. All right. Then laptops. Came, yeah, we don't have that. Then came the whatever, and but before long, everything was already, it was moving very fast. So I can't even keep pace with that one. So, but we must move on and things like that. But our database, I think, is very weak. Because when I want to ask for information, I find it difficult, and I cannot understand that. Because when I ask my daughter abroad, studying abroad for that, she gives it to me faster than I can get it here. So I said, why?
What do you mean database, sir, of information?
For information. We don't have everything.
About the country.
Even about the country. I get it better in Yale. Wow. I mean, things like that. Huh? Oh.
Anyway, thank you, sir.
Senator, thank you for gracing our show and best of luck in your campaign.
Well, thank you very much, you know, based on education for me. I am an illiterate when it comes to this. But it's a confession I like to make. Thank you again for this opportunity.
Thank you for listening to the Election 2007 podcast of Inquirer.net. No part of this podcast may be reproduced without the written consent of Inquirer.net. For more information, comments, or suggestions, you can email us at election2007podcast@inquirer.net. That's ELEKSYON2007podcast@inquirer.net. Produced by Creative Voices Productions. All rights reserved, 2007.